Welcome to a new episode of Land Grant Holy Land's recruiting centric podcast, The Dotted Line. My name is Matt Tamanini. On this podcast, we talk to Ohio State and national recruiting experts, LGHL's own recruiting analysts, and even recruits themselves. On today's episode, I am joined by Shane Bailey, who Ohio State fans who are anywhere around the Twitter machine likely know as @BuckeyesCruton. Shane is one of our recruiting analysts here at LGHL as well. Shane, welcome back.
Thank you for having me once again.
So we are just a couple days out from the Tulsa game, and things have not gone especially well for Ohio State on the field this season. Did not go how many of us thought they would. But obviously this is a recruiting podcast, Shane, and I want to kind of talk to you about how things have gone on the recruiting trail in light of the fact that the Buckeyes have been fairly unimpressive and underachieved so far during the first 3 weeks of the season. And I think the best place to start that conversation is with the Ohio State-Oregon game. Caleb and I talked about it before the game. That was supposed to be the big recruiting day of the entire season. Tons of guys were there, big name guys. There were some guys that weren't able to make it, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But the game left a lot to be desired. But I want to start with the guy who Caleb and I kind of said was the biggest recruit there, and that is the number one player in the 2024 class, at least according to 24/7 Sports individual rankings. They don't have composite rankings yet for the 2024 class, but that is a South Carolina quarterback, Jaden Davis, who has long been at the top of Ohio State's board, and Ohio State has long been on the top of his board. He was in Columbus for the Oregon game. Didn't get the win, but how did his visit go beyond that?
Well, yeah, and I've been talking about Jaden Davis all summer too. He's definitely the future in the quarterback position 2024. This kid is unbelievable. And his trip, you know, like you said, Oregon game didn't exactly go how we wanted it to go. That's putting it lightly. But all in all, it looks and sounds like he had another great trip to Ohio State. It looks like an article by Steve Wolfong, he got some 24/7 Sports. He had some quotes from Jaden, his father, Jeremiah, who said that they were able to speak to Gene Smith, spoke to him, and he also ran into the general manager of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who I assume was probably there doing some scouting for the NFL, because, you know, Ohio State and Oregon both are filled with future NFL talent there. But he also had mentioned how awesome the environment was. It was very loud in the fourth quarter. And, you know, I know some Ohio State fans are always complaining about how the environment is too soft and everyone's sitting down. But it really sounds like that he was pretty impressed with how loud the horseshoe had gotten and how much the fans were really cheering on the team, even though, once again, we didn't really show up there. But, you know, it also looks like another quote that he had was that from the two visits they had took, they said Ohio State is big time football. Everybody's involved. They called it the SEC of the Midwest. They said it was a great atmosphere and that Coach Day is an absolutely outstanding developer of quarterbacks. And you know, I keep coming back on here and we keep coming back to the same thing about the breaks in between classes, skipping a class for each elite quarterback. And that was actually something that they talked about in this interview as well. And they said, they looked at how the quarterback stuff translates as far as recruiting with Quinn Ewers reclassifying to the 2022. There's an empty space between him and Jaden, and that was a quote from his father. So, you know, that's obviously something they're looking at, and I think is could actually be something that can help Ohio State in this instance with Quinn Ewers going up a year and the 2023-2024 quarterback classes getting a little bit more space in there so we don't have quite a bit of a logjam as we do right now with the quarterback position.
Yeah, that logjam is going to get increasingly interesting as we hear more and more calls from fans who want to see somebody other than C.J. Stroud behind or under center, because he was under center a lot more than we've seen in a long time this past Saturday against Tulsa. But about Jaden Davis, we said he's the number one player according to 24/7 now. Again, no composite rankings are available yet, but he's having a pretty good fall for his high school football team, the Catawba Ridge High School in Fort Mill, South Carolina. I know you aren't necessarily paid to follow South Carolina high school football, but you said that he's had a pretty good season so far and does not seem to want to be giving up that number one ranking anytime soon.
Oh, no. Yeah, I think this is going to be one of those instances where he runs the gambit one number one to number one, because this kid has a cannon of an arm. And it looks like I have his max prep page here. It looks like so far this fall, he has 776 yards, 9 touchdowns, and 1 interception with when he is 52 and 92 passing. So, yeah, he's already off to a very hot start this sophomore season. And I don't think that's going to slow down. I think this is one of the kids that is going to be just like the whole Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, even the Quinn Ewers hype train eventually when we start getting closer to 2024.
So we talked about the fact that like there's these gaps in between years, especially now with Quinn Ewers reclassifying. It's a bigger gap than there would have originally been between him and Jaden Davis. Obviously, we don't know what the hell is going to happen with the quarterback position with the guys who are currently at Ohio State. I feel pretty strong that Quinn Ewers is going to be here for the duration. What happens with everybody else? Who knows? Your gut instinct and what you say, what you are hearing and seeing. Obviously, Ohio State is still recruiting 2023 guys, especially. But if you had to make a guess on it, and we've talked about this a lot, but quarterback is the most important position on the entire team. I'm interested what your thoughts are now that we've seen a little bit more from Jaden Davis in his recruitment. He's going to a bunch of other schools making the rounds. What is your gut reaction as to how the quarterback recruiting will play out between now and his class in 2024?
That's very interesting, because I know that's something that they were also looking at with the class of 2023 quarterback, Arch Manning. Obviously, everybody knows Archie Manning. So Arch yeah. Manning is one of the best quarterbacks in 2023. And I know I had seen in some of the recruiting articles that Jaden Davis was also talking about keeping an eye out on where he was going to be going to school. So that's something also to keep an eye on, is the Arch Manning sweepstakes, and see how those dominoes fall. Because I know it looks like Jaden visited Georgia last week, and there was an article on their 24/7 page about how apparently Kirby Smart was telling them that Jaden Davis is their planned successor for the 2024 season. And if they land Arch Manning, they have this big plan and all that, you know, nonsense that Kirby Smart rattles off anytime he talks to recruits, probably. I think the Ohio State's really good. I think Jaden Davis is definitely at the top of their board, period, at any class right now. And I'm not sure if that's going to affect how they recruit in 2023, especially with all the quarterbacks we have in the room right now. There's definitely going to be transfers. I'm assuming there's going to be transfers. But it's also going to depend on how many transfers, how many quarterbacks they plan on taking in 2023, if they're just going to take one and then a grad transfer, or if they only go the grad transfer route just for depth purposes and really try and shoot for the stars in 2024. You could go any which direction these days with how the portal is. So it's definitely interesting, and we'll see how that's going to pan out here.
Yeah, I mean, getting either Jaden Davis or Arch Manning would be a good thing for Ohio State. So I don't know that you turn down either one of them if they want to come to Ohio State. If Arch Manning says, hey, I want to be a Buckeye, you take him. And then you figure out what you do with Jaden Davis. He probably won't come. But if you are guaranteed, as much as a commitment is a guarantee these days, but if Arch Manning says, I'm coming to Ohio State, even if Jaden Davis is your number one on your board, you take him, because Jaden Davis is a year later and not a guarantee. If someone wants to commit like Arch Manning, you go ahead and take him at that moment. So it'll be interesting. I'm glad that he had a good time in Columbus, despite the fact that Ohio State didn't win. But hopefully next time he's on campus is for an official visit sometime. I mean, maybe he comes for another unofficial during his junior year or something, but hopefully next time he's on campus, whenever that might be, involves a win for the Buckeyes. Now, there's another guy who's a little bit more of an immediate need for Ohio State, who has just made a kind of surprising announcement, and that is Cedar Grove High School Defensive lineman Christian Miller is a 2022 recruit, number 111 in the class, a four-star defensive lineman. He is from Ellenwood, Georgia. He had been previously crystal balled to USC, but when he announced his final two, the Trojans were not included, obviously, with the firing of the head coach. Obviously, those things can change, but it was down to his in-state Georgia Bulldogs and Ohio State. So we've talked a lot about in recent podcasts the lack of offensive and defensive linemen so far in the 2022 class, which is starting to get a little concerning. I mean, like, for a while we've said, oh, there's plenty of time, but like, not that much time left anymore. When you start thinking about it, there's like 2.5 months before the early signing period, and you've got to get some guys in there. So what do we know about Christian Miller? What do we know about his decision-making process? And what do we know about where he stands in terms of the Buckeyes?
Oh, yeah. So it's definitely a bit surprising that he dropped USC, because he was the crystal ball favorite, definitely was leaning towards that direction. And then I'm not sure if it was, I'm assuming it's probably mostly due to the coaching change there. But I know he also had an outstanding trip to Ohio State during the Oregon game. He, one of the things that he made a point of talking about was seeing Jack Sawyer and JT make all those plays out there as true freshmen, and that how any defensive tackle would absolutely love to play with those two elite defensive ends. And so that was an interesting thing he brought up that I didn't really think about a lot in terms of his recruitment, was that he saw two true freshman defensive ends that were making an impact, maybe not the biggest impact yet, but they're still on the field, and how he would stated that he would love to play with defensive ends like that to, for them to help eat up the blockers and allow the defensive tackles to get more plays. And I think that's something that Ohio State has definitely got working for it, is some good young defensive ends that he could come in and help grow with as he grows up and matures with the system and all that. Now, he says he was no longer considering USC and that it was down to Ohio State and Georgia. He's only taken officials so far to Ohio State and USC, so he still has his official visit left to UGA. So obviously that's going to be a big visit for him, and where do the Buckeyes stand on his board? It looks like he's planning to announce January 7th at the All-American Bowl. So there is still a little bit
There's more time
for Christian there. Yeah. So we'll see if he moves that up or moves it back, or who knows when everyone decides these days. So that's his plan as of right now. He said that January 7th would be his date, and that he was down to Ohio State and Georgia. Also going to be interesting to see how the Ohio State defensive tackle board plays out as we get closer to the national signing day with Christian Miller and Caden Curry. And I know there's some other ones. Hero Kanu as well. Or Kano, I think is how you pronounce it. My apologies. So I think we definitely have some options on the board, but I definitely – I think Christian Miller is pretty high up there as far as prospects that Ohio State would be willing to take right now.
Yeah, the defensive line board has been a little bit weird, because there were times fairly recently when we thought that we were going to get booms like within days, and they just haven't happened. And it's a weird situation. That a position that has been so good for Ohio State, that has one of the most well-respected position coaches in the country, hasn't been able to land guys, whether that's like we thought Gabriel Brownlow Dindy could be in there at some point. You mentioned Caden Curry, who I want to talk about here in a minute. Chris McClellan, we thought was, I mean, literally, he said when he was on campus over the summer, he almost committed to Larry Johnson. Now it seems like he's trending towards his home state Sooners. Curtis Neal, we thought could be a Buckeye at one point. He's a lower rated guy, but he ended up at Wisconsin. So it's just been a weird kind of deal with the defensive line this year. So if they can get German-born Hero Kanu to commit, that's great. Christian Miller, that's great. But it's just been a weird, weird deal on the defensive line this year, and I don't know exactly what to make with it. But you mentioned Caden Curry, who is another defensive lineman. He is from Greenwood, Indiana, goes to Center Grove High School, the number 69, nice player in the country, a four-star recruit. He is still considering a ton of programs, Indiana, Alabama, Clemson, Oregon. He does have one crystal ball prediction, and it is for the Buckeyes, but it comes from the Florida State insider. So unless it's coming from Bill Kerlerker, Steve Wilfong, I'm not putting a ton of thought into that one. But in this need for defensive linemen, Shane, like where do things stand with Caden Curry? Do we know a timeline for when he's looking to decide? What he's also going to the All-American Bowl, so I guess it could be in January. But what are we thinking with Curry and the remainder of his recruitment?
I think I definitely feel more confident in Curry than Christian Miller at this point. I think Ohio State's been one of the constants in his recruitment from start to now. And he had another good visit to Ohio State. This time it was his official visit. It looks like this past weekend, he also visited Indiana officially when they had played Cincinnati. And it looks like he has two more official visits left. And he's trying to, or three more, sorry. And it looks like he's trying to go to Clemson, Alabama, and Oregon as well. So this is another one. And that's really what I think is going on with this year's defensive line recruiting, is that a lot of the top players that Ohio State likes to get committed and committed early, a lot of them are waiting longer this year. So it's going to be interesting, because obviously we don't want to take a player just to get a player filling a position. And this year, so many of the defensive tackles and defensive ends aren't going to be deciding until the All-American Bowls and possibly after that. So it's always a juggling act with the Ohio State coaches and who they can accept a commitment from, or should they take someone too early and risk running off another person. And that's, I think, this year definitely the biggest thing with the reason of not having very many defensive linemen committed is that just the fact that so many of them aren't committing until January. Yeah. As it looks like also as well that Caden Curry is going to be taking the rest of his three visits, and also a return trip looks like to Ohio State, which is good news for us, to visit us for the Penn State game. So that hopefully will happen, and I hope to God they finally give us a night game for a recruiting visit, for recruiting visits, and we don't have another big noon kickoff, because I'm about done with those.
We were going to talk about this at the end, but let's talk about it now. You went on a little bit of a mini rant on Monday on Twitter about noon games versus night games. And I don't think necessarily that you were talking strictly about recruiting, but since this is our recruiting podcast, I do want to talk a little bit about how these noon games impact recruiting. And I understand, we've talked about this. I've had Ben Koo from Awful Announcing on here to talk about why Fox is doing these noon games with the Big Ten. They want to own that window. The Big Ten always draws eyeballs, especially if it's Ohio State. So I get it from a broadcasting and a financial situation for Fox. And I understand that Ohio State doesn't really have a choice when it comes to this, because they have contracts with Fox. But it does suck in a lot of respects. I don't mind some noon games. I don't mind some big games being at noon. But when you constantly have them, and you know, you get Akron for a night game instead on BTN, it's a bit different. So for people who don't understand, explain how night games can be advantageous beyond just the better environment when it comes to recruiting, because it also plays in pretty heavily to scheduling as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And my Twitter rant started today because I saw that Penn State had yet another night game against Indiana where they were doing a stripe out or something like that. I don't know. But I saw that. Yeah, exactly. And I saw that, and it makes me think. I was like, okay, Penn State this is now their second great night game that's going to almost assuredly have all-star list of recruits that are going to be coming to visit for it. Because like you said, I mean, the night games atmospheres usually are better, but the biggest thing is for these recruits on the West Coast, they have their games Friday nights. So, you know, you're playing Friday Night Lights, games start 6, 7 o'clock. God knows how late that some of them can go. And then what, they're supposed to just go to bed, get up at like, what, 6 a.m. in the morning, fly out to Columbus for a noon game?
Not even, because they're 3 hours behind. So 6 a.m. Would be 9 a.m. here. So I don't even know if they have flights early enough. They'd have to almost take the red eye after a game to get here.
Yeah, and that's happened multiple recruits this year that were supposed to be visiting Ohio State for the Oregon game. One of them being one of the biggest offensive lineman targets left, Ernest Green, out there in St. John Bosco, California, home of Wyatt Davis. And he was supposed to be coming to the Oregon game, Ohio State-Oregon game, but their game ended too late Friday, and they couldn't, like you said, couldn't get the flights out early enough to see the game on Saturday at noon. So, and same thing, but there was also another trio of prospects from St. John Bosco that are a bunch of elite prospects in 2024, safety and quarterback prospects from out there. They were supposed to be coming to visit for the Oregon game. They're on his team, obviously, so they had the same predicament. They couldn't get out here in time. And that's just one of the things that you want to have these night games to make a spectacle. You want to have this big, awesome environment. I mean, obviously, everybody sees the whiteout that Penn State has, even though they're, 8-7 in it. But it's just something that you can show these recruits, like, this is it. This is the big time. This is Ohio State football. And then we put Akron at night. So, like, I know it's mostly Fox. It's got to be Fox because they want to have their big noon kickoff. They want to have this big time slot all to themselves. But if I was Gene Smith or Brian Day, I honestly tell Fox, like, please, like, give us something here. Because I think what the last time I looked at the schedule today, and someone else had also pointed it out on Twitter, the last night game that Ohio State had that was a big game was 2017, the Oklahoma game where we unfortunately we had lost, but still, like, that's what, 27, that's 4 years ago. Like, come on now. I know we had COVID last season, but
yeah,
that's still, 4 years too many to have a big night game.
Yeah, there were still no night games there either. So, and the thing is like, I don't know if this is I think it's an official rule, or it might be an unofficial rule. I'm almost positive it's an official rule that the Big Ten does not play night games in November, for obvious reasons, because, I mean, I guess climate change might not make this true anymore, but for a long time it gets really cold in November in the Big Ten country. So you don't have night games in November. So really, you've got 2 months of potential night games. So at most, you know, six, depending on how many road games you play, five, depending on if the front half of your Big Ten schedule is loaded with road games. So you don't really have a lot of opportunities. And depending on how the schedule lines up, there's maybe one or two opportunities to have good games at night for any given team, for Ohio State or whomever. Oregon was definitely one. And they've really the only other one on the schedule is Penn State. I guess Maryland is playing pretty well this year. They've got a win over West Virginia and they're undefeated. So good for them. So you could have put that at night, but they're not. That's going to be a noon game. And then the only other team they play, they don't really play any other teams at home left. So you've got Rutgers on the road. You've got Indiana on the road. And that's the end of October when you get to Penn State. So if Ohio State and Penn State is at noon like I expect it to be, that means that there will be no marquee matchups at night for Ohio State this season at home. I would not be surprised if Ohio State and Indiana, I don't know what else is that week. I guess that could be a noon kickoff, but a lot of times Ohio State plays night games at Indiana too. So we'll see.
Absolutely get a night game on the road. I can guarantee we'll play another night game on the road, but they're not going to give us one.
So who knows? It's a weird thing. And I generally don't care for me. Like, it doesn't bother me. Like, I'm fine with noon games. It means that for all of us doing articles and stuff after the game, like, it means we've got plenty of time, so that's fine from like a selfish blogger perspective and a podcaster perspective. But like, from an actual substantive impact on the football program, it really sucks not to have any night games, both from an energy and excitement level for the recruits, but also for that scheduling. So I wish that they could find a way to negotiate with Fox and all the other TV partners to say, look, you can't give us every noon game. And I don't know how you do that, working into whatever the next TV deal is, but we will see if that actually changes, and we'll cross our fingers for Penn State, Ohio State at night, the night before Halloween too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Night before Halloween, there's probably also going to be playoff baseball on or something like that, or what's October? Yeah. We'll see about that.
That could be on Fox too, because Fox has a lot of baseball. So
exactly, yeah, that's how we got screwed out of the games last year, or was it last 2 years ago? Mm-hmm. It was during the World Series, and everybody was saying, "Oh, we can't have the night games. Fox has to put the World Series on." Yeah, mm-hmm. It's just a big mess, and just like you said, not playing the night games in November. We got Purdue and Michigan State back to back weekends at home, and I feel like either of those would be a fun night game to have.
Yeah, especially, I mean, both of them are undefeated. Ohio State's not. Yeah. Michigan State looks, you know, pretty good. I mean, especially because they only won two games last year. They've already won three, and Kenneth Walker III, I think is his name. I hope I didn't screw up his last name. Kenneth Walker III is a beast at running back. And
absolutely.
Mel Tucker, former Ohio State assistant. So
yeah, and they're even currently ranked right now, obviously. Yeah. This is until late year, but they're ranked 20th right now. So
I'll
take anything. Yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, let's wrap it up, Shane. Your weekly column looking at the current players in the 2022 class comes out on Tuesday. So depending on the timing of the article on this podcast and when you're listening and or reading things on the site, it might be already out or it will be coming out soon. You've been on a recent run of receivers, I believe, and this week you are continuing that with Kojo Antwi, who committed to Ohio State the day after Independence Day this summer on July 5th. He's the number 127 player in the country, a four-star wide receiver out of Suwanee, Georgia, Lambert High School. When I coached baseball and softball in Georgia, they were in our conference, so I know Lambert, which was a fairly new school at the time, pretty well. He is number 127 in the composite rankings, like I said, 24/7 Sports, who I think has the most accurate of individual site rankings, has him as number 71. So that's encouraging. This is an interesting dude, interesting backstory. What can you tell us about him that Ohio State fans need to know, especially because there's still some time between now and signing day, and those in-state Georgia Bulldogs really like him.
Yeah, and I know that there was some rumors going around that he might have visited Georgia there over this past weekend. So I'm not 100% certain if that is accurate or not. So I'm not going to say with any certainty. But if that is true, I mean, you got to recruit these guys all the way to signing day, and there's nobody I'd rather have on that case than Coach Hartline. So I think this one is just a case of maybe just making absolutely sure that he wants to be here. And I don't think there's going to be much of an issue with Kojo there. And I'm writing about him in my article this week, like you said, the last receiver for this article series. And just watching some of his tape, he's absolutely elite route runner. And that's just something that I feel like you always see with the recruits that Ohio State is going after these days. It's just the route running. It's just a source of pride for Coach Hartline and Zone 6. And I noticed immediately when watching Kojo on tape that he sets up the defensive backs to make some absolutely hilarious mishaps when he's trying to catch the ball and just absolutely mosses people. So I think really the only thing is maybe keep an eye out on Georgia to see if they're trying to maybe negative recruit our depth chart or something like that. But I still think we'll see Kojo and Scarlett Gray when it's all said and done.
Yeah, the one thing that I would be concerned about is how little the ball has been spread around over the last year plus to the wide receivers. I mean, obviously, when you have players like Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, although he didn't have a catch this past weekend, they're gonna garner a lot of the attention from the quarterbacks. But like, when you have as many talented wide receivers as Ohio State has, and as Brian Hartline has recruited, to not be able to get some of those other guys, Julian Fleming, the number one receiver in the country, hasn't had, I mean, maybe 10 catches at most, and that's just off the top of my head. I could see that being something where other schools negatively recruited. They have too many. They only go to their top two guys. Obviously, Jackson Smith and Jigba had a great game against Oregon, but really wasn't targeted much at all against Tulsa. And granted, CJ Stroud didn't have a great game. But I could see that as being an issue. You know, sometimes having too much of a good thing becomes a bad thing. And hopefully that's not the case with Brian Hartline's wide receiver room. But I could definitely see that being something that other schools try to harp on when going up against Ohio State for wide receivers?
Oh, yeah. It's just a giant chess match between all these coaches trying to get the best point of view and opinions to the kids and show them that this is the best place for them. And I'm sure that the other schools are saying, oh, they don't throw to their deep wide receiver room, all that. But I think another part of that is the some pretty tough games earlier on in the schedule, Minnesota and Oregon. So I think hopefully they're in Akron this week and maybe some of the other – yeah, hopefully they're in Akron this week. We'll get to see some of the young guys come out and hopefully we can put enough distance between us and Akron in the first quarter. Or I'll be optimistic here and say the first quarter, but hopefully the first half that we get to see some of these young receivers out there and what they can do. Because I think even in the few snaps they have gotten, I can tell that Julian Fleming he's going to be something special.
I hope so. Yeah, between him and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka and Jaden Ballard, even because he gets lost in the shuffle as well, despite being another really highly recruited guy. It'd be nice to see that happen. I have an article that went up on Monday saying that maybe there needs to be a look at getting another quarterback in there for this week at least. So maybe go check that out and see how I think that should go down. But it'll be interesting. Ohio State's literally a 50 point plus or 53. I forget what the actual number is at this point. 50 plus point.
I think it was
favorite.
53 and now it's dropped to 49 right now.
Oh, 53 to 49. Huge difference. I'm still not touching.
Yeah, 53 to 49.
I am not touching that thing. I've watched Ohio State this season. I am not touching that thing one way or the other, because I think they absolutely could cover that number, but I'm not going to bet on it, and I'm not going to bet against it. A fool and his money are quickly parted, so I will not be a fool in that regard. But
yeah.
All right, Shane, I appreciate it, and thank you all for listening to this episode of Land Grant Holy Lands, the Dotted Line podcast. Thank you, Shane, as always, for being a part of the show. In the show notes and in the article version of this episode at landgrantholyland.com, we will have a link to your Twitter account. But of course, if you are a true Buckeye fan, you are already following him on Twitter at Buckeyes Crouton. That's BUCKEYESCROOTIN. And if you are finding this episode on landgrantholyland.com, please subscribe wherever you get your podcast. We are cranking out at least one episode every single day throughout this entire football season, and they've all got some unique perspective or voice that you cannot hear anywhere else in the Buckeye podcasting universe. Also, don't forget to follow Land Grant Holyland on Twitter at landgrant33, and you can find me at BWWMatt. Thanks for listening. We will talk to you soon, and as always, go Bucks.